welcome to the 24th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. Co-hosting with me is our lich-like troubadour, Lester Crowe and his strolling bones. And returning to the show, our special guest, Jordan Bloody Sunboy, also known as Webhead123 on YouTube, Steelman, and Layla Fridge Gargoyle Miranova. So we've got many of our I want to say older cast members. That doesn't sound right. We've got everybody turning back for a new year. We had a great 2011. We're looking forward to a great 2012. So welcome everybody.
1 year older, 1 year closer to Alzheimer's.
Is that what it is?
There's looking up.
So did everybody have a good 2011? I mean, we had a lot of content coming out over this last year, and I know everyone's really itching to see what's going to be coming out for 2012. I think we'll kind of get into that in a little bit. So we're going to take a chance in this episode to focus on what happened over 2011, what we liked, what we didn't like, kind of where everything went with the game as a whole, and then also try and break down some speculation on where we think it's going. And we're going to take into account some of the things like online rumors of where third edition's going, what the release schedule looks like, and also what we all think from a practical standpoint we can realistically see. So with that, Lester, do you want to tell us a little bit about the news that we've all been gone now for probably a little over a month now, right? When our last episode launched?
Easily, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was in December, early December, yeah.
Right, and we had like 3 or 4 episodes planned in between then and now. What happened to those?
I was hibernating.
I remember showing up to record.
Yeah, I'm a polar bear from Canada. We like to sleep.
Well, did anybody get any gaming in over the holidays?
I got lots of gaming in. I didn't get to play any Warhammer, though, but I'm currently, putting a game together right now, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Are you guys going to do Warhammer?
Yeah, as soon as we're done recording this, I'm going to go and we're going to finish building characters and play a game. It's going to be fun.
Awesome.
So who are you playing with? Is this a new group, or is this...
My girlfriend's playing with us, and then a guy she works with, who is really creative, and he's played Dungeons & Dragons before, and he is pretty excited to kind of see how it is, because it's a completely different experience than the D20 Dungeons & Dragons, so it should be relatively fun. I'm hoping a couple other people will show up and build characters in the next couple hours, and then we can start playing.
Who's going to GM?
I always GM, apparently.
It's a curse.
There's a really good video on YouTube by a guy named Samwise7 who talks about the GM disease, where you basically get stuck being the GM, and then you have a hard time when you actually get to be a player stepping out of that role.
Actually, it's a really funny, or very timely comment, because I am now, over the holiday, we started, we're continuing the game with all the characters from our Witch's Song live recording sessions. Mm-hmm. And we're taking one of those players, and he's offered to GM the next session. So everybody's keeping their same characters and moving them into this other one where this other guy is GMing, and I'm having an opportunity to play.
And you're playing Horror of Hugadol?
Yeah, we just started it. We recorded our second session of that last night, and Layla is also playing in that, because she's playing Helga. And so how's that going?
Helga's as stubborn as ever. It's gone all right, I think. She's getting into trouble now.
Yeah, we're going to probably put those episodes live. Actually, I was thinking of doing one of them tonight. We'll see how the editing goes. Otherwise, I'll put them up at the end of the weekend. But yeah, Helga's kind of been going through an awkward transition as she's struggling with, motivation, right?
Yeah, she keeps struggling with motivation. She just doesn't know what she's doing or why she's doing it.
Well, it seems like an odd group of people for her to be surrounded by. It's a bunch of dwarves, isn't it?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, now I've got a human with me, so I'm having a little fun with him.
Yeah, I'm playing an amethyst wizard.
Oh, which, yeah, that's right.
For both, because I wanted to kind of help get the rules you know, explain the rules and actual, like, you know, play styles of a wizard into some of our live sessions, but also I wanted something quirky and something that I normally don't play. So I'm having quite a bit of fun with that. And Chris Wagner, who plays Grom, the dwarf slayer in the earlier sessions, he's the one who's GMing it. And we're two sessions in, we're about to uncover some trouble. Cool. But Jordan, what have you been up to?
Well, the holidays have actually pretty much destroyed my my gaming. I've gotten a few kind of smirks and I say smirk. Smirk sounds a little too optimistic, but I've gotten some groans and rolling eyes from some of my players just because between the hectic schedule of the holidays and my sickness, I've kind of been sick off and on all this season, and so it's definitely put a damper. But I told my players that next, not this coming Saturday, but next Saturday, we're definitely going to be back on for our regular Warhammer game. So I'm looking forward to that. The last session, though, the last one we had, which I think was right after Thanksgiving, that was the session that we got to use the campaign coins for the first time. That
was going to ask you about that.
Oh, that's right. You did. How'd those work out?
I liked him. There was kind of an initial learning curve, I guess. You know, when he first kind of broke out his bag and he set them out on the table, there was just that initial hurdle, I guess, of we didn't really know the denominations that we had in front of us and how we were going to use them. But once we got them figured out, I think it actually made the exchange of money flow a lot more smoothly. But it also just felt more interesting in the game to actually hand, you know, the GM coins when you were buying something.
So did you guys end up getting that big custom box, the starter set box?
I don't think it was the full starter set. I think he had bought, cause we knew, from a Warhammer perspective that really the majority of the coinage that's going to go around is the silver pieces and a few of the brass pieces. Mm-hmm. So he primarily bought like some of the silver coins, a bundle of those, and then had a couple of the gold coins, but not too many of them. But we did realize that we had a few too few. So he bought, I think it was literally in the middle of the game session that he popped out his laptop and he ordered another batch because we were just running out of change.
And what are these for?
They're just they're coins. They're actual metal coins that you buy, but they look, you know, like fantasy style, you know, gold doubloons or something like that. So it's just they come in denominations of, you know, like ones and fives and tens, and I think even 50s. And so you have actual, you can actually have your character's money in front of you instead of just marking it on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, I think it makes them make better decisions with their money, and they'll feel the pinch when they're like running low on money, you know?
Yeah.
I really like the idea of being able to transfer around, you know, tangible objects when you're when you're playing. And if it weren't for the kind of initial entry cost into getting them, I'd have them right away, but I'm still heavily considering it.
Yeah, I like the idea of the cards too, the item cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I bought all of those, and I haven't really used them yet. I have them all sitting in a binder kind of ready, and I think actually probably because the horror at Hugeldahl session was the one that we started playing right after I bought them, so I haven't GM'd a session that would require them yet. But well, what other news do we have that that's kicked off over the last month, Lester?
Well, they released more information on Heroes Call, another spoiler, I guess, if you will, and they just kind of discuss like high level wizards. And
well, it's actually quite a bit of news came out over the last month. This new kind of pre-release overview, but we also heard over the last couple of days that it's on the boat, which means that we're probably going to be seeing it sometime early February.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring when it would come out. Because I mean, how many products do you think they're going to release this year? Or are we going to talk about
let's save that, because that's going to be some good speculation. And what I'd like to do is take a chance to review how much content came out over 2011, and we can maybe try and use that as maybe a predictive model.
Yeah, well, I'd say there's some really cool pictures for sure on the release for this, for the Heroes Call box. I really like the Wizard Lord. The art is amazing. I'm a really big fan of Celestial Wizards, the Blue Wizards. And it's really interesting because they get a whole bunch of extra career skills, I guess.
And then the talent slots, yeah.
And then the talent slots, they get 3 talent slots, and then they also have, or they get 5 talent slots in total, and one of them can be anything.
Yeah, the any talent slot is a new one for these rank 4 and 5 careers, which is generally what's going to get introduced with the Hero's Call, which means characters who have anywhere from, you know, kind of 30 plus experience points. The any slot allows you to socket any kind of talent. So this Wizard Lord, as an example, has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 talent slots that could be socketed onto him. Anything up to this point, the most we've seen is 3. So it really shows your ability to kind of just socket on crazy amounts of content onto your character. I can already see, though, the table real estate getting gobbled up even more now, because we're socketing cards now onto the bottom of your character sheet in addition to the right hand side.
Yeah.
But it also introduced a preview of 2 of the rank 4 or potentially 5 spells that some of the characters are going to gain access to. I think we're going to see some rank 4 or 5 spells for priests and for wizards, and also a few rank 4 or 5 action cards.
Yeah, for sure. They're showing too how they're using the mechanic where you already have built-in challenges and banes when you try to do them. Like they have that final portent of Amuel they show, and it has like 2 purple difficulty dice, but it also automatically counts 2 challenges and 1 bane. So I'm assuming, I mean, they're really trying to counteract how powerful you'll be by that point in time.
Right. And do you think that kind of goes into the idea where everybody's saying, well, your chances of success are just too great at certain points in the game, and your chance of failure is almost nothing, and it really just becomes a matter of measuring how effective the attack or spell was? So is this a way to maybe rein that in a little bit? You can't instead of just keep adding purple or black dice, it's adding a built-in negative effects.
Yeah, some, like a solid challenge for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you're going to be rolling so many dice by the time you're at that rank 4 or 5. I mean,
yeah,
you have to have some sort of mechanic to dampen the success for sure.
I think it was a really smart move. I thought it was actually a really clever idea that is something that you didn't necessarily expect that they would do, but it makes complete sense for them to present, since they already kind of use this kind of iconography in their cards, that just to use the actual symbols as icons on the cards is actually pretty clever.
That's the first time we've seen that, right?
It is.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed, or that I thought about too, when you're talking about like those high level spells, is that by putting just the challenge and the bane symbols on there instead of, you know, just slapping on additional purple dice. Of course, the trouble with wizards is that if you roll chaos stars, that you open yourself up to backlash.
Mm-hmm.
I could only imagine if you were throwing 4 challenge dice on every rank 5 spell that it's kind of like a neutron star. Your high-powered wizards would just end up collapsing over the weight of their own chaos.
You know, you bring up an interesting point there, which is that I can't remember what other game I was doing this on, but at a certain point, if you're rolling, it was Warhammer Tabletop, and we were discussing at what point how many power dice do you throw in to casting a spell. In this case, you're rolling d6s, because if you ever roll 2 ones, you've miscast, and there's a very significant statistical jump from rolling, 4 dice to rolling 5 dice for your chances of rolling 2 ones.
Right.
And I mean, it's a huge jump at around that point, and to the point where it's almost, you'd almost never use 5 dice.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're
turns, right?
Right. So, but I wonder if they're kind of thinking of the same thing. Well, we can't force players, if they want to cast a spell, to roll 5 purple dice. One, nobody has 5 purple dice. You probably need to go buy an extra dice set. But 2, statistically, the chances, of rolling the Chaos Star on those become almost you almost will generate 1 every roll. So that, maybe that's why they're forcing permanent negative effects instead of adding extra purple dice.
Yeah. Well, and it keeps kind of a certain ridiculousness out of the game, because you should expect that that high-level spellcasters are going to be more generally more competent than less competent, right? So
yeah.
If you're throwing...
And spells don't get a default purple die to begin with. You only go off of what the card says, unless you're doing something.
And this effect isn't just for like spellcasters either. Apparently, like cards like parry and stuff like that. There's an advanced parry. You can add the two recharge tokens to it to actually add a challenge, a bane, and a purple dice, a challenge dice to the action that's targeting you, like an attack that's targeting you.
Yeah. So these are like advanced parries.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the rank, it's the third tier of active defenses. And we see samples of the advanced parry, final strike, which is an epic melee action, and then something called spell weaving. Those last two, though, the cards are mostly obstructed, so it's a little difficult to see actually what the ability does. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty interesting to see that we're going to get some high-level skills and abilities for what seems to be a little bit of everything. I think it's probably going to focus on spells, though. Don't you think that's going to be the majority of the cards? Spells and pre-spells?
Most likely, I would assume. Do you think they're going to have a really high level social skill?
I think we'll probably see a couple. I struggle though to think what a high level social skill would even do.
Yeah, it's true.
But they do leave one last little teaser at the end here in italics. At the very end, it says, "In our next preview, discover the two new playable races."
Oh, nice.
So finally. What that means is we'll get one more preview and then it's going to be released. So we can probably look forward to that next next update, probably near the 25th or so, or near the end of this month, I'd guess.
Yeah, that's what I think. And we'll finally put to rest the question of who is going to be the other race.
I've still got my money on the halflings and ogres.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Just to make sense with the canon.
So other news, we've got the Lure of Power, which is the Slaaneshi supplement, is available for digital download. Yahoo. How do you guys feel about those? They're you know, after the main product gets released, they've been releasing PDF versions of all of the books available for purchase for significantly less money, where you only get the book, none of the physical components. Do you guys think those things are... How do you feel about those?
I think that's really good if you're doing the chitlist version. If you have just the books, the guides, if you just have those, then I think it's a great idea.
Have any of you guys bought any of the e-versions of the books?
No.
I bought a copy. I think it was way, way, way early in the game's life. I did buy a digital copy, I think, of the Tome of Adventure in the from the core set, and the only reason for that was because at the time, you know, they hadn't released the creature box, and so we didn't have the creatures on cards, and I wanted to have a way that I could put creature stats on the table.
And I felt those. I have a copy of those early books as well, and I felt that those kind of turned me off to ever purchasing any of the future ones early quality ones were very poorly organized, very poorly optimized, and they struggled from some pages rendering poorly, if not at all. I think there was at least five or six pages in the books that just didn't work, and I was kind of afraid that that would carry on.
Yeah.
You were talking. And they were massive image files. I mean, because they had. So many layers to each page because of all the layout and graphics and all that kind of thing, that it would like virtually crash Adobe every time you scroll through it at more than one page at a time.
Well, if you're trying to keep down your clutter too, because there's quite a few pieces to it, I mean, it might be smart if you have some sort of digital device to have the digital, you know, copies of these PDFs. But I much prefer the actual hard copy. I like to roll dice instead of use the calculator to roll dice for me.
Yeah.
As an example, I guess.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then when we get back, what I'd like to do is do a little recap of how 2011 went for everybody, talk about some, you know, personal highlights, maybe some of our, go over the different modules that came out, talk about some of our favorites, and really just kind of reminisce about how fun 2011 was, and then after that, we'll talk about what's to come. All right, and we're back. So 2011, it felt like a pretty busy year. I know here at the Reckless Dice podcast, we spent quite a bit of time getting ramped up. We actually began the podcast, I think, early December of last year, and we're actually probably just now passing our anniversary of our episode one. And we also saw several new supplements for the game. We were freshly coming out of all of the new vault releases and reprints of the hardback rulebooks. So everybody was kind of either joyous or up in arms about that. And we were everyone was looking forward to seeing the Gen Con shifting through shadows content kind of come to reality, where they had graciously outlined what products would be released over the course of at least a fair part of the year, and the rest we were kind of left to kind of watch happen naturally. So Lester, walk us through kind of where we what we've done this year so far.
Well, as far as I know, and I could be wrong on this, but the release, like the order of the releases, went Witch's Song, which was an adventure, and it's a really good adventure, actually.
And we just finished recording the live sessions of that one, which seems to be the most popular adventure we've done to date.
Oh yeah, it's really,
it was a five-part.
I think it was four parts
with an epilogue, right?
Yeah.
I missed the last one, so I don't know.
You missed episode four, so you were in the epilogue, but you were right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that one was very well received.
Yeah, it's really good. I like that one a lot. But I think they released that kind of to support the stuff that was released just before, the chitless version or whatever, to kind of, I guess, to kind of show that they were planning to keep the same structure where you buy the boxes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that was followed by Blackfire Pass, which that one, there's some hits in it, but I thought that they could have gone in a bigger direction, because I think, like, personally, something that was really big in 2011 was how you evolved the Schmott WoW. I, like, just love that thing. It's great. It's a really good tool for creating stories and finding places, and I just think it's great. And they didn't really include a really good map to, like, you know, sink your teeth into in the Blackfire Pass supplement. And I kind of wanted to see something like that, but they really, the only one they've released so far was in Lure of Power, where it's like a really good map in the back.
You mean the Ubersreich map?
Yeah.
Well, that map we'd seen in a couple other supplements earlier on too. But I mean, you know, between the Witch's Song, Blackfire Pass, Omens of War, and Lure of Power, that more or less summed up the products we saw during 2011.
Yeah.
Is that all of them?
I think that's all of them. I think there were four, so that's like one every quarter, which makes sense for how much content there is in each one.
And in theory, you could potentially add the Journey to Blackfire Pass, but I think that might have been released before the turn of the year.
That was released actually a long time ago. I was under the impression that was something you showed, like they were encouraging
show that. I think you're right. That probably was 2010.
Street Teams, not Street Kids, but yeah.
So if we can kind of if we can take that and maybe extrapolate a little further into, you know, one a quarter, that's pretty reasonable to assume then that we're probably going to see something about once a quarter during 2012. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a pretty stable release schedule. Yeah. I think that's pretty much what they did for 2010 if you take the vaults and hardback books out of the equation.
Yeah. Well, we already know the first thing that's coming out in 2012, and that's Heroes Call.
So what was your guys, like, what was your highlight of 2011? Jordan, what was your highlight?
2011 actually turned out to be a pretty good year of gaming for me. I had played a couple of one-shots of Warhammer 3rd here and there with groups of varying sizes in the prior years, but 2011 was actually the first year that I got a good solid campaign going. We started a new campaign, I want to say sometime around September, so we're not too terribly deep into it yet, but we've gotten several good sessions and got a good solid base of four players going with some.
Is that one that you're players. Are you GMing that?
Yeah. Like Lester
what are
said.
You, what are you guys playing? Are you doing one of the printed scenarios, or are you doing a custom one?
I actually took it upon myself. None of my players have really. They're all pretty much new to Warhammer in general. And so none of them have played any of the first edition or second edition material. And I am generally such a fan of I did a custom scenario as the very, very initial scenario for my two Warf players because they were available for the session and characters ready before the other players did. So I ran a custom little adventure there, which was kind of a witch hunt kind of thing. And then when I had the full group formed up, I actually ran them through the Open Hauler contract, which is the sample adventure out of the original first edition Warhammer Fantasy Core book. And then since then, we've moved on to the Enemy Within, the Shadows over Bogenhofen.
Okay. So, you know, Layla, you're new to Warhammer role-playing in general as well.
Mm-hmm.
How did, you know, tell me a little bit about what worked or didn't work for you during 2011.
Well, I started out with it pretty much not taking it seriously at all. It was just kind of something you and I were goofing around with. And at first there was a giant beaver and all this nonsense. But then I kind of found myself getting more into the actual world because we started reading the books a little bit, and then I started playing, and I was actually pretty surprised that I liked it as much as I did. And so I think probably the highlight, or I don't know, like the part that I enjoy the most about it now is kind of discovering that the world is so rich with like all these various histories of the different races and the different peoples and, you know, like cities and towns. And there's a lot of nuances that I just don't know about. So I think that's what's most interesting for me at this point.
I think you chose an interesting character. I mean, initially you chose to play Helga, who's a commoner from like the wastes of Kislev, as almost purposefully to be somewhat ignorant of where the majority of the game takes place. And I think that was an interesting decision.
Right, because it mirrored my absolute lack of knowledge about anything related to this, you know, world.
I thought that it was kind of a fun way to actually, like, you know, kind of teach you about the world through her experiences. But that made it very interesting through gameplay, actually, as well, because that translates a lot into really either awkward scenarios or ways where you can almost just, like, hey, I don't get who Moore is. Can you tell me? And then, like, there's a legitimate reason to educate you, the other players, or the listeners on why that's the case. So I thought that was real fortunate.
Yeah. It would be a little more fortunate if the other players that we played with believed that I actually don't know anything. Because I think they assume that I do. So when I'm like, what's this? They're like, don't you know? Why am I explaining this to you?
Well, I think it's funny because a lot of times you have this... You role play way better than most people who have been playing for a long time, in that you play your character. You're not playing a person who's playing their character. You just, while you're there, you're playing your character. So when you act goofy, dumb, straightforward, whatever, you are playing it. You are doing it. And everyone else is like, you know, well, I usually just say my character says this, and it really becomes pretty funny when she's doing it, because nobody really knows what to make of it sometimes.
And I found myself transitioning into doing things like, well, Helga says, or Helga wants to, because I feel like that's more understandable. But I do have fun just, like, acting retarded. as my character.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this new group that I'm putting together because there are two guys who are really animated in that way. They get right into it, you know?
Well, so it sounds like we've got, the group I'm running with locally here are largely familiar with Warhammer, at least on a reasonable level. But it sounds like, you know, between Layla and you two guys, you guys are running two groups with people who are not very familiar with Warhammer. So I'm curious how you guys are all adjusting your adventures or helping people kind of get into it who are not already familiar with it. How are you handling that?
I just kind of nerd out on them every once in a while when I have their attention and I talk about it a little bit, you know. Some of them are more curious than others, like, especially the two animated players, they're kind of curious. I just barely met the one guy who's playing a grave robber to start with. And then
that's what I did the first game I played.
Yeah, he's going to play as the grave robber, and then my girlfriend is going to play as a witch trying to become a necromancer. So they're kind of going to be on the outside of the social structure.
That'll be really interesting. That's cool. I find a lot of new players inherently play somebody who's not already in trouble.
Yeah.
And that kind of creates an immediate lack of motivation.
And I'm actually really excited that we're starting now because there's all four of the chaos powers that I can throw at will, you know, and mm-hmm. I have a pretty good base of stuff too for people to, when they start making their characters, if they want to make a social character, you know, there's solid mechanics for that, you know, so I don't have to kind of, I don't know, I don't have to fudge it as much, although I tend to anyway. I tend to house rule stuff pretty heavily to make it fun, you know?
And so, Jordan, are you doing anything special to kind of tailor your games to people who are either coming from D&D or who don't know the Warhammer world? Do you have an adventure that kind of teaches the world to them, or do you kind of just like let it naturally happen?
Yeah, I'm a pretty organic kind of person. What I did do a little bit of kind of prep beforehand in that I even for myself, even non-RPG material as reference, even though I don't play the Warhammer battle game, I have a lot of the army books. Mm-hmm. And so as we were rolling up characters, you know, I had two players that rolled up dwarves. So I lent them my dwarf army book and I said, hey, you know, you don't have to read this whole thing because half of it is battle game stats that don't matter anyway, but read the, you know, the beginning part with the history of the dwarves and read about their personality and read about the different, you know, types of characters in dwarf society, just so that they could at least get a feel for it.
Look at all the pretty pictures too, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Full of beautiful, evocative artwork. Actually, that was one of the things, one of the other resources I was going to say, I very, very briefly played the Warhammer MMO, but yeah. I bought the, you know, collector's edition or whatever, and it
yeah, I have this. I have that one too. That's a great. Yeah. That comes some great stuff.
With that gorgeous art book.
Yes, the art book's fantastic.
And I just brought that table just so that, you know, when I describe, you know, the first time that they approached Altdorf, and I was describing, you know, the great wall of Altdorf, and I just mm-hmm. pulled out the picture from that book and I showed it to them so that they would have an idea of, you know, what everything really looks like. But I also just try to ease them into it because I know most of them are either completely new to Warhammer or, you know, maybe they've heard about it and they've kind of seen bits and pieces of it, but they really aren't, don't have more than a very passing familiarity. So I just try to kind of build that into my adventures where they just kind of encounter things. And as they encounter things, then they ask me questions and I kind of explain the way the world works to them.
That's interesting. I came up with an interesting concept with my character that I just started playing in the Horror of Hugeldahl game, because, you know, Helga and the dwarves being the rest of the group who are largely unfamiliar with kind of like the Reichlander culture. I decided as a wizard, I know that culture and I'm educated. So in essence, I can kind of be a player and a resource to kind of educate not only the people who are listening to the podcast, but also, you know, elevate the knowledge of the region, the cultural stuff. Yeah, they have now a role-playing reason to be taught about culture and the land. So I'm looking forward to having some fun, you know, like just being able to like talk about chaos and all these things that like may or may not be understood by anybody else until you experience it.
And give us ample time to poke fun at you.
I did give a little bit of time for that, yeah.
For that.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd love to talk about what we think is in store for us for 2012. All right, so 2012, we're already 12 days into it. Tomorrow's Friday the 13th. Everything's looking good and exciting. We've got Heroes Call just around the corner, which is looking to be a very exciting high-level content supplement with two new races. So let's begin a little bit of speculation and educated speculation on what we think is in store for us for 2012. Anybody want to kick that one off?
We've already been talking about Heroes Call, and that's an obvious one because it's going to be here soon. And I think that's awesome, especially for people who've actually had the chance to play for a long time. That's something I'm probably going to have to incorporate a lot later, unless we decide to start a high-level campaign. But I think
Let's do a quick overview of what Heroes Call is going to include, because in theory, if we go back and see that we're getting four pieces of content a year, this does represent 25% of our Warhammer content for the year. So, you know, we know we're going to get two new races. We know we're going to get very high level careers, ranks 4 and 5 for our characters to go into. We're going to get some rank 4 and 5 action cards.
A bunch of cultural differences between the humans and dwarves, too. There's going to be different human, like, I guess, factions or tribes you can choose from, probably Nordlanders, you know?
Yeah, which we're kind of expecting people can, instead of just coming from the Reichland, they can come from Nuln
or Ostland. Kislev could have, like, you know...
They could be resilient to the ice.
Fortune dice when interacting with a goat. Yeah, or like goat interaction.
Did you say goat interaction?
Yeah, I'm trying to bring Fridge Gargoyle into it a little bit.
Because my character is all about the goat.
Good old Rob. You know, I've been working on
it. I know, that's why I made the quip about adding 5 for us.
I've been working on doing a drawing of all of the party members for from the Witch's Song adventure, and so I've got Rob and Helga and Thorin and Grom all already drawn up. I just need to get my new character and get Baird and the Hunter in there, and then I'll put them all together and put them up on the web, like a big old like party sheet or party illustration.
Nice.
It's all done in like a cartoony style, almost like if they were all like Disney characters.
Oh, sweet.
It's kind of goofy, and Rob is perfect, so I'm thrilled with that.
He's got a genuinely confused face. It's pretty awesome.
So the Heroes Call is also introducing like nemesis level bad guys. So we're talking some named bad guys. We're also talking just ways to increase the difficulty to create almost like a boss encounter of any other normal creature. Yeah. So it sounds like it's meant to be a pretty beefy piece of content. Do we know yet if it's going to include an adventure?
I'm going to assume, just because hasn't every single like boxed release like this come with 2 books?
Yes, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say they had mentioned that it's going to include an adventure. I don't know what it will be. Part of me wants to say it's going to have something to do with like a WA or like an orc invasion. I'm not sure why I'm thinking that. I'm wondering if I'm making it up or if I'm just
maybe because they teased the one I can't remember. Was it Grimgor Ironhide? Is that who it is?
Yeah, the guy on the Wyvern.
Yeah.
And that was one of the pieces of art that was teased back at Gen Con which makes me kind of think. I know he is included in the package. I know he's in there. Yeah. And I wonder if...
You probably get Von Karstein and those guys, too, probably. Probably one of the vampires.
Archaon, the Everchosen.
Yeah, because they're going to... I'm almost convinced that they're going to usher in the Storm of Chaos. And they're going
to
bring...
I think that's going to have to happen, yeah.
Bring it on.
Those of you unfamiliar with the Storm of Chaos, that was a whole release line of miniatures and kind of relaunching the Chaos miniatures, which happened about 6 or 7 years ago for the Warhammer tabletop games. So this is something that's kind of already happened in the tabletop world.
And but second edition was after, like, the books describe the Empire after the Storm of Chaos has taken place.
Right. Yeah. So for those of you, third edition is actually before. We've actually gone back in time, in theory.
Well, having the second edition books would be good, because if you're playing a third edition game from, the start date in the third edition game, you actually have some really good spoilers as to what canonically happened during the Storm of Chaos, So you can describe all sorts of rumors of what's going on all around, and then, put your heroes into situations involving these, epic events.
I guess in theory, this could be a spoiler warning. It's all public knowledge and it's all already happened for years now, so I don't really consider it a spoiler, but if you're really concerned with kind of what happens in the Storm of Chaos, you might want to, turn your ears off for a few minutes. But ultimately this guy Archaon, who they've teased about and talked about in several of the books now, is a Chaos, Lord, who has effectively gotten all the four Chaos Gods to stop fighting and choose him as their champion. And he is now forming up an army that is going to move south and just lay waste to the Empire. So that is the Storm of Chaos. Mm-hmm. Now, there are several key battles that happened during the Storm of Chaos.
And there is an orc invasion, too, that happens at the same time.
Yes, and the orcs take advantage of the Chaos invasion and the chaos that's going on to launch invasion. The Skaven do the same. Ultimately, it's kind of the perfect storm of every bad guy in the world taking the opportunity to try and just destroy humanity.
The classic destruction versus order. That's kind of like the pivotal moral quandary in Warhammer. So,
and if I recall correctly, the pivotal battles, Kislev was a really big one.
Yeah.
Talibheim, I believe, is where the ultimate final conflict takes place, mm-hmm. which is in the cratered city there. That's where ultimately they were pushed back, I believe. Now, it's all already kind of been decided and everything that's happened. It was like the way that Games Workshop wrote the whole scenario was that they allowed people to play these games and actually wrote the Warhammer history based on the way that the community played and the results that were tallied from all these games that happened. So, there was a chance that Talibheim in theory could have been destroyed. It wasn't, but they pulsed the Chaos Invasion.
A lot of people think that it was rigged, though. So that
it might have been.
So that order could just stay up on top, so you could have the two. Because once Chaos eats order, then there's no more.
I think there might have been a chance to kill off a few characters.
Well, they killed the main hero in it, right?
To be honest, I do not recall if Archaon was slain or not. I don't think he was.
The main hero is Valtan, right? He's like the reincarnation of Sigmar, and he ends up getting killed. He ends up getting assassinated at the very end of the story. But anyway,
where we're all kind of going with all of this is after Heroes Call, we have three more pieces of content that we're likely to see. Now, they've been laying the foundation for what is ultimately going to be the Storm of Chaos. So we're all waiting and expecting a large campaign type supplement to show up sometime soon. And it really seems like the Storm of Chaos is going to be that piece of content.
Yeah, it seems like what it's building up to, definitely.
So this, like, the multi-part campaign release packet is probably going to be a series of releases telling the story and incorporating your characters into the Storm of Chaos. Now, in what capacity that's going to take, I have no idea yet. Do you guys have any thoughts?
Jordan, what do you think?
It's kind of hard to say. If we're talking about kind of a release schedule of one box set a quarter, And then, of course, with Hero's Call out of the way, then that leaves us three boxes that they could release for us over the year. If that's going to be focused on the idea of kind of a larger, overarching, interconnected campaign series, which is something we haven't ever seen for third edition so mm-hmm. far. Everything's just been pretty well standalone.
I mean, version 1 and version 2 each had their one, like, three-part release mega right. campaign, but you and everyone even, knows when will come.
You could even tie the elves into it, because do the elves come and help in the Storm of Chaos? I'm sure they say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you could add that kind of in the whole expansion, the line. They could slip that in there.
But, well, let's talk about that, because we know there's going to be... We know there's still some other races that have been released that need their standalone content packs, like how the dwarves got Blackfyre Pass. So at what point can we expect that to come? Do you think that's this year?
See, I'm still skeptical. I'd love to see something with the elves, but I'm really skeptical because they've really hardly ever touched on the elves in the role-playing game, at least, in all the different, like, the previous editions.
So, I mean, I'm kind of thinking, let's talk about the possibility of an elf expansion for a minute, because I think high elves are, you know, humans, they're set. They've got all the content they need for ages right now,
mm-hmm.
Or at least will after Hero's Call. Dwarves, they're in pretty good shape. High elves and wood elves are the two other playable races that were in place at launch that haven't seen any love yet. So let's talk, about if you were to make an elf expansion, because I think the possibility of that's still reasonably high.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think it would include at this point?
Do you think it would
include details on Ulthuan?
I think what I would do I think what we've come to this conclusion in the past is that they've kind of done a dualistic approach to the products, like mm-hmm. the main releases. So I would assume that you would pit the Dark Elves versus the High Elves. And
that still makes sense to me.
You'll have Ulthuan and Naggaroth, and you would, it would be the story. But you could also package all the Elves into one with the Sundering. But I think it almost makes more sense to do a Wood Elf one with, say, the Beastmen, because Beastmen are that's like a huge portion of
Yeah, they haven't gotten a lot of love yet either.
So,
do you think that if a elf and let's just pretend for the sake of argument it was high elves and dark elves, would you position the adventure that would come with that supplement like in Ulthuan, or would you?
Because totally.
I mean that has not happened yet in any edition. Nobody really goes there because no one's allowed there. There's no reason all our other humans and dwarves would have a fun adventure there or even have a chance to travel there. Do you think it would be more realistic to expect some kind of maybe Marienburg or something like that, where the elves have a very prominent presence as a trading community? Do you think maybe that might be the chance to expand one of the other major cities and have something still take place in the Empire that's largely influenced by elves and dark elves?
They very well could do that. I'd like to see them do like a gazetteer, though, that's similar to Sigmar's Heirs, where it's it gives you like a map and it gives you information on all the different provinces. But I have a feeling that Hero's Call might tackle that with the separating of the different tribes of humans. I think they might negate the need to really describe the provinces, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say. I personally, if I were to design it, would put Ulthuan in. That's where I would. I wouldn't set the adventure in Ulthuan. I'd set the adventure in Naggaroth, but I would include Ulthuan.
In Naggaroth, really?
Yeah, like you go, kill some stuff. I don't know, go look for a treasure or something like
that. I mean, no, it sounds awesome. I just think the practicality of actually seeing that's next to zero.
Really?
I don't think that they are ready yet to send adventure to do printed adventures that are outside of the Empire.
Yeah, maybe not.
I want to see it, but I don't think they're in they're far enough into the product maturity to let that happen yet.
Yeah, that's my bit as well. If they're going to explore elves in any detail in a supplement, as adventurous I think as third edition is going to get at this point, is going to go to someplace like Marienburg. So if we did see a high elves versus dark elves kind of an adventure or something like that, that I could, I would more see kind of, you know, dark elf raiders kind of raiding the shores of Marienburg or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that, again, you know, that still keeps the players within the party within the realm of the Empire in a sense, and but also allows more kind of elfy influences.
So I'm thinking we're going to, my prediction is we will see a standalone elf expansion this year. And I also think we will see at least part one of a grand campaign, leaving at least one more content piece unclaimed. So that could either be part two of the campaign or something else. So if it were something else, what do you guys think might be a reasonable thing to want, or what do you think might actually realistically show up?
Well, I want a gazetteer. Like, I want something that gives a meaty amount of information on the Empire itself. Throw an adventure in there, or just throw a whole bunch of adventure hooks in there based in different locales of the Empire. Put a big fold-out map in it, and there you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, something that I think about is that if you think about the idea with Heroes Call that they're introducing these two new playable races, you know, presumably halflings and whatever the other may be, which may be ogres or may not be ogres, you know, who knows, they could surprise us. But if you think about that and you think about the fact that early on they're going to give us new options, but that these options are coming so late in the game that they have nowhere near the support of any of the other characters, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll see exactly how they handle, you know, career options for these new races and all that good stuff. But if you think about it, they would almost need some additional content to support these two new races, because so much of the content of Heroes Call is going to be obviously eaten up by, you know, higher rank characters, yeah, for existing races.
I could also see them releasing a second wave of guides and vaults to augment the stuff that has been released since they released the last ones.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of feed into that topic. Now's probably a great time to do it before we wrap up. The forums have kind of been alight recently with two bits of news, one of them questionable in accuracy, but there's been some talk about the fifth edition of Dungeons and Dragons being announced, yep, where they are
the new iteration. It's the new iteration, not the fifth edition.
Okay, well, whatever it's called, I don't follow D&D enough, so I saw it called fifth ed, and that's what I'm referring to it for now as. But either way, they're taking the rumors that they are going to follow a similar content style to the way Warhammer is being presented, with a lot of the more high level movement. They're getting away from the heavily rules oriented combat structure, grids are going away, all that kind of stuff. And so that's one part of the rumor mill that's churning. And the second part, somebody put up a very interesting topic on the forums, indicating that he said he had some valid rumors that were coming out on a fourth edition of Warhammer being introduced. And that immediately was met with quite a bit of, what the hell are you talking about? And explaining how the state of Warhammer is or is not healthy, and, you know, kind of trying to put down the rumors of this slow release schedule is the death of the game, or, you know, really just like the rumor mill went nuts when this guy made this post.
Well, I honestly think that it's just that Fantasy Flight Games is a big company that releases hundreds of different products, and they only can have a small budget for role-playing games. They have many role-playing games being released. They're currently working on Star Wars, the role-playing game, which I anticipate to be quite a bit like Warhammer, similar mechanics. And you can only have so many people. I think four products with the amount of content that you receive in each product is, you can't really ask for more than that.
So what was interesting though, is that this person felt that the game was already at a state where a new edition was required. And kind of to your point, Lester, where you were saying that, you know, maybe we need a new set of vaults, or maybe we need a new set of revised rule books to incorporate all the content to date. This guy was kind of like, well, hey, here's the rumors that I've heard. Now everybody kind of like shut him down, saying your rumors are just your speculation, not actually, grounded in any, anything you've heard. But it kind of got everybody thinking, well, you know, is a 3.5 needed or something, where they kind of refocus everybody again? Because the way that they're releasing products is continuing to add rules, modular sets of rules that you can or can't use depending on what content you own.
But the original guides had they had the Signs of Faith and the Winds of Magic information in them, and now since
right,
then,
but now they don't have Omens of War, exactly. And they don't have Hedge Magic, and they don't have.
All you have to do is release a collection of that, call it the guide, Guide 2 or whatever, and just collect that information into.
So the feasibility of what's effectively a version 3.5 or the new set of vaults. Do you guys think that's something that might happen?
I could see it around Christmas time, possibly, depending. Like, it all depends on the support of the game. And like I said, they only have so many resources to throw around.
Yeah, I don't know quite where I sit on whether or not I think that's a good idea or if I think it's even feasible. Jordan, Layla, what do you guys think if somebody were at this point to effectively reprint the books?
Mm-hmm. I don't think, on a personal level, I don't think it would be a terribly good idea. I think it would be a smarter move, even from a sales and marketing standpoint, to do kind of what I seem to hear Lester saying is do more of like a follow-up supplement. So it's kind of like here's the splat book for all the information for you Warhammer Light players that wasn't in the guides. But the idea of them kind of like republishing, a 3.5 or kind of a revised, re-edited, newer, bigger, expanded version, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think it would have a whole lot of appeal to the customer base, really, at this point.
I mean, we've already been asked to repurchase things twice now.
Yeah,
I don't think the community can handle it again.
Well, it was just in my opinion, a terrible business idea and move to even release the guides in the first place and vaults. I personally think they should have just stuck to their guns because it was a good system. And, the only difference I see with like Pathfinder and Dungeons and Dragons and Warhammer now is that you get everything when you purchase the Warhammer products, you get all the little chits and bits and everything, whereas these other companies release their products individually and you're going to buy all of them anyway, like you're going to get the miniatures for Warhammer or for Dungeons and Dragons because you have to play with them pretty much with the fourth edition of Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
So, I mean, I just think they should have stuck to their guns and kept the model and just gone forward with it.
Yeah. I don't see it as being likely just because I don't think, the game is still young enough and the game is different enough that really the its differences are its appeal. I mean, that's where I think it drives its customer base is because it is a different consumer experience for an RPG. And I just can't, as fragmented and as confusing as some folks seem to feel Warhammer 3rd has become with this whole split between, the guides versus the box sets and everything. I don't see it as a good move, and I don't see a lot of people buying into the idea of a 3.5 release or something like that.
Yeah, I just see them printing like Player's Guide 2 and maybe Game Master's Guide 2 or Tome of Adventure 2 or whatever. And that just has that could even have the adventures collected and you charge $50 for that or whatever and you make your money for the information. But who knows, right? I just think that they should abandon that and just stick with the release structure as it is currently.
Mm-hmm. I think the one last thing to note is that, the likelihood of a new edition entirely, I think, is next to zero at this point, though a couple people have, outlined how or why they might want to do it. Fantasy Flight now has the core element and the core elements of the Warhammer world in place. They are now at the point where they can just release content for it as opposed to building the foundation. This is where the game wants to be now that it's fully built now. Now it just needs to be tended to and allow it to mature. This is where they're going to be making their money from this point forward. I think
your assumption of them releasing maybe two portions of the campaign makes a lot of sense.
I think historically it had happened almost in three books, hadn't it? In both first edition and second edition, they were three different books that all together created this like trifecta mega campaign. I wouldn't be surprised if they continued something like that.
Yeah, like three sets. Three sets similar to the Witch's Song.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Maybe one focusing on greenskins, one on goblins, or one on Skaven, and one on chaos.
Yeah.
Or something like that would be neat. Well, I think we're going to abandon the Q&A for this episode, and we'll try and do a big one of those next time. But I want to thank everybody for a really successful 2011. We had some heartache, we had some great times, we had some cool games, a lot of cool new releases, a lot of fun people on the show. We look forward to a really exciting 2012. So our hats off to everybody and thank you very much. And last but not least, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Lester, 2 weeks?
Maybe a week and a half to make up.
And
let's do it tomorrow.
Hey, I am going to do another Tough Mudder over the weekend, so I will be gone. Be sure to comment on the site recklessdice.com or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and Facebook at recklessdice. And one last plea for help. As we mentioned in our last episode, we have transferred to we have relaunched the podcast on iTunes, which means that we have lost all of the wonderful and constructive comments that you guys had given us over the past year. We would really appreciate it if you take an opportunity, if you're enjoying the podcast and want to contribute, to please rate us on iTunes. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a comment. We love your guys' feedback and love to adjust the content and the flow of the podcast to what you guys like to hear. That's why we do it. And again, thank you for a great year.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot, guys.